You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
Coming up on the SBS On The Money podcast, are we at the end of the Reserve Bank interest rate cutting cycle? We take a look at how much the Qantas CEO is being paid and the changes to the ARIA music charts, what it means for diversity and the industry. All of that and more next. Everyone, welcome to the SBS On The Money podcast for this Friday, the 5th of September 2025. It's a day where the Australian share market rose, the ASX 200 up by 0.5%. We'll have the details with Bryce Anderson from Morningstar in a few moments, as well as an interview with ANZ's Madeleine Dunk, who says there's a risk the RBA may be done cutting interest rates. We'll find out why soon. But first to the ARIA music charts, which rank the nation's most listened to songs, giving them even greater exposure. However, more recently, it's been dominated often by older songs, especially on its Australian charts, disadvantaging new artists. But from today, a change to the calculation method, which will have big implications for the music industry and the music economy locally. To tell us about it, I spoke with ARIA CEO Annabelle Hurd. Annabelle, so new rules are being implemented in the way ARIA calculates its methodology for the charts. Can you run us through them and just how significant they are?
Yeah, so these are the biggest changes we've made to the charts since we incorporated streaming. And what we've done is we've said that to be on the main albums and singles chart and on the Australian albums and singles chart, a track or an album has to be under 2 years old. So everything older than 2 years will move over to a brand new chart, which we've called the ARIA on replay chart.
Why was this needed?
Look, I think streaming changed everything about the way people to listen to music, and it changed the way the charts really look. What we found was there was a lot of older music sticking around in the charts for a very, very long time, both Australian music and international music, and it made the charts quite lacking in dynamism, a little bit boring, if you will. So what we looked at over the last sort of 12 months was how we could make the charts more exciting and more dynamic, but also, you know, we had to look at whether there were barriers in there for Australian artists and for Australian albums, that because if there were barriers in there, we wanted to get rid of them. And this is where we landed after that review.
I know that the chart comes out today for the first time, this updated chart. What's the feedback, though, from the industry been like?
It has been amazing, actually. When we first announced this a couple of months ago, people were very, very receptive. We did develop these changes with a broad cross-section of representatives from the recorded music industry. So we made sure that we did a lot of modelling, that we had a pretty good idea of what the result was going to be. But it's been extremely positive. Everybody's very excited to see what the new charts look like today.
You mentioned those barriers to entry, right, especially for those new artists, which are often younger, diverse and reflective of the Australian community, right? What do you think this change means for the music industry, its artists, and especially, as I mentioned, those diverse groups?
We have an incredibly diverse Australian music industry across so many genres. One of the genres I've worked with a lot is sort of hip-hop, R&B, and, you know, in that genre, we just have so many great young Australian artists from diverse communities in our big cities around the country, so many First Nations artists that do so well in that genre as well, and many other genres. So what we are hoping with these changes is that the charts will be freed up so that some new Australian music can jump into those spots that those older albums and older tracks were kind of hogging, I guess, for the last few years.
And finally, it's a basic question, probably should have started with it. Why are these charts needed?
The charts are really the only place that you can see all in one place what people, what Australians are consuming, what Australians are listening to. So we have inputs from all of these streaming services, from physical sales. So it's the only place where you can actually get that holistic picture of what everyone's listening to. And it's, I think, really important for Australians to know what music is popular right now, what Australian artists are bubbling up. I'm super excited to see the number one single and album on the Australian artist charts today, because that's where we're going to see a lot of change. And we haven't had a new Australian single at the top of that chart for a very long time, thanks to the brilliance of Vance Joy and Crowded House. In fact, I think last week the top seven tracks were older tracks, so it's going to be a big change. So I just think it's another great opportunity for us to showcase Australian music to our audiences, and particularly younger audiences, and give Australian artists a better chance at success.
That's Annabelle Heard there, the CEO of ARIA, and anyone interested in that number one song now, it is Dancing To by Kelly Holiday. Look them up, I guess. Let's go into more business and finance news today now. And is the RBA done cutting interest rates? That's the risk, according to ANZ, following this week's GDP figures, which showed a pickup in housing consumption. For more, I spoke with Madeline Dunk from ANZ. Madeline, to what extent does this week's GDP report complicate the outlook for future RBA interest rate reductions, and why?
Yeah, I think the key thing coming out of the consumption, or sorry, the GDP data that we had earlier this week was the strength that we're seeing in consumption. For some time, the private side of the economy has been the weakest part of the economy. We've seen that a lot of the GDP growth has been coming from public demand. But today, or the GDP data that we received earlier this week, it showed that consumption is picking up. We had 0.9% growth in the quarter. And in particular, you saw people were going out and spending on the fun things. We saw that discretionary consumption was up 1.4% in the quarter. And we've been waiting for that for some time. If you look at a lot of the indicators, things like incomes, for example, consumer sentiment, they have suggested that spending will pick up. But we're starting to see it now in the hard data. And because of that, it just suggests that we might not see many more rate cuts from the RBA, and there is a possibility that you actually see the RBA keep the cash rate on hold where it is.
Are there any other variables, though, adding to that case for rates to stay on hold or even potentially not being cut anymore?
Yeah, I think there's a few things going on. One is, of course, the consumer and what we're seeing there, and also the lift in housing prices really feeds into that consumer story. But the other thing too is that the labor market still looks really resilient. We've got a very low unemployment rate. And if you look at a lot of the forward indicators, they don't suggest that the labor market is going to roll over anytime soon. So you think about the labor market still looking pretty resilient, consumer spending picking up, and signs in that monthly CPI we had a little while ago that there's probably not that much more disinflation in train. It doesn't feel like an environment where we're that far away from that neutral cash rate.
So do borrowers really need to prepare for the prospect that this interest rate cutting cycle may end early or is already over?
Look, our view at ANZ is that you will see one more rate cut in November, but I think the consumer data is suggesting that there is a possibility that we don't see more cuts coming through from the RBA and that the cash rate actually stays on hold where it is right now. And the RBA has made it very clear that they're going to be quite data dependent moving forward. So we're going to have to watch to see what happens with the labor market, what happens with that quarterly inflation data, and importantly, what happens on the consumer side too. Do we continue to see consumer sentiment move up? Do we continue to see that recovery in housing prices? And if you do see signs like that, then maybe we're around that neutral cash rate.
And what's interesting too is that I know that ANZ put out some stats today saying that you're forecasting $611 million will be spent this Father's Day weekend, right? So given that solid consumer, the fact that we may be at the end of a rate cutting cycle, what does it say about the economy? Is there a silver lining here?
Well, I think it really goes to the resilience of the Australian economy. If you think back to a couple of years ago, the RBA were talking a lot about how they were walking that narrow path. They wanted to keep inflation down, also keep people in jobs. And you'd say that they'd really done that pretty well. They've walked that tightrope reasonably successfully. And the fact that we are starting to see consumption pick up, the fact that household balance sheets have remained very resilient is all positive, and it does suggest that the economy is on that recovery track.
That's Madeleine Dunk there from ANZ. Now let's take a look at the Australian share market today, which closed higher, the S&P ASX 200 adding 0.5% to 8,871. Nine of 11 sectors ended higher. The best performing included property and consumer discretionary. A closer look at the best and worst performing stocks include the best HMC Capital, up by around 10%, followed by PolyNovo, which added about 8%. The worst two performing stocks, Boss Energy, off by 2.5%, and Lynas Rare Earth, 3% weaker. For more on the day's market action, I spoke with Bryce Anderson, a portfolio manager at Morningstar. So Bryce, US jobs data is out later tonight. How important are these, and what's it likely to mean for the future path of US interest rates and the implication for investors?
Yeah, sure. So it is important and it isn't. The jobs number is another data point for the Fed to consider on their path of managing inflation. And the short-term path is looking like a cut, frankly. And that's frankly what the market's expecting. Now, they're trying to colour in a pretty fuzzy picture and looking for concrete ways to make it more clearer. So data's the main one. The longer-term view, I think, from here is a bit more, frankly, uncertain with some of Trump's policies potentially inflationary. And then also the prospect of Trump meddling in the Fed Reserve, which undermines its independence, and are clearly items which are cause for pause. Now, what you've got to build into that is the valuation. So where are yields at the moment? So I think with all that said and done, 10-year yields are still north of 4%. So there's still compensation for investors for that. And we think, as in terms of our forecast, that yields are in and around in the US, in and around fair value long term. And that's reasonable reward for bond investors.
What about here? ANZ economists now say that while a rate cut in November is more likely than not, the GDP figures from earlier in the week says there are chances of there being no rate cut in November, or indeed at all, that this might be the very end of the RBA rate cutting cycle. What does the market think?
Sure. Yes, yeah, so I think the prospect of rate cuts here are probably pushed out a little with some of the economic data that's been coming out and been pretty positive. I think the market still thinks that inflation will continue to ease. And so there, and as inflation targets, I think they expect to be some future easing by the RBA, just a little stretched out, frankly. And like the US, when you take it back to, okay, so what are investors getting compensated for in taking some of these risks and where inflation is and where growth is? So Australian 10-year yields are well north of 4%, which are frankly pretty reasonable levels, particularly if you look in the rearview mirror and wind back the clock to pre-2022 when yields struggled to get above 2. I think investors are getting some level of yield out of government bonds.
One of the company stories of the day is that of Qantas. It released its annual report and has docked executives 15% of their bonuses because of the airline's recent cyber breach. Still, Vanessa Hudson, the CEO, is taking a $6.3 million pay packet home in total. To what extent is there stakeholder pressure for management, though, to take responsibility for these types of issues?
I think bluntly, stakeholders, shareholders should expect them to take responsibility for them. And I think there's always been pressure there, and it's been probably always there in one way or another. I think executives, to me, are the custodians of the businesses. And so they need to manage risks in their business and control for these type of issues. And while cyber risk, I think, is the issue of the day, and it's a huge issue for businesses, it's just another business risk, which has always been there. You should feel it, or executives should feel it, whether it's been, if a risk like that's been mismanaged or not managed. So I think when executives get docked pay and their bonuses, I think that's actually a good thing, where there's alignment, incentives and behaviours, and frankly, there should be. And that's not always the case, but executives should feel the pain when shareholders feel the pain. That's a good thing, but like I said, not always the case in terms of alignment.
I love the fact that we're finally over well and truly with reporting season, but you've had a bit of time now to look through the numbers. What did you see as the key themes, and how are Australian companies placed in this uncertain economic environment?
I think if we look back on what's been a feature of the reporting season in whole, it's really been the size of the reactions. And whilst moves around earnings announcements are normal in a reporting season, it's really been the magnitude given some of the change under the within these businesses, which have been quite small. So, and particularly at the large end of town. So if you take Woolies, CSL, James Hardie's, all these had massive responses to their earnings results, which on the whole side, they weren't terrible. Like there was some weakness in some of them, but Woolies has been like double digit on the day, CSL similar, James Hardie's over 20% on the day. Really, really, it's the magnitude, not necessarily that companies have missed and they've sold out. It's just that magnitude. But if we take some of that aside, overall is a pretty strong reporting season. The market marched on, which is no feat given some of the what you mentioned around the uncertainty of the operating environment out there. But as you said, so where to from here? So following on reporting season, we digested everything, and there hasn't been a lot of change in fair values for companies at like at the really micro level, and then when it bubbles all up at the overall level. And when we look at it, and we like to hang our hat on valuation and what investors are paying for a particular business. And in aggregate, Australia's trading at pretty elevated multiples. And so companies need to jump over a higher bar as expectations that get priced in jump higher as well. So that's how we'd think about it is focus on the long term. Long term, the best way to focus on the long term is look at valuation. Aussie equities aggregate pretty expensive.
And finally, and very quickly, what are you telling your clients right now, and where do you see the opportunities for investors?
Yeah. If we look at equity markets, where we find opportunity is international equities, but you have to look a bit under the hood to find the opportunity. So there's a few areas of the market that we like. Emerging markets is one to call out. So specifically Brazil, China, Korea. Those are three markets we like. Then if we flip over and think about the sector level, some of the sectors that we like are the things that have been under pressure in the short term, but we think like looking through the noise, focusing on valuation, focusing on long term. And two of those areas, healthcare is one. There's a lot of noise out of the US around healthcare. We like healthcare long term, specifically big pharma. And then likewise, consumer cyclical names. So there's been a lot of pressure points for a lot of these companies around tariffs, weakness in China, cost of living pressures, et cetera. We think that a lot of that's really baked into prices. So there's some really interesting opportunities in consumer cyclicals if you're willing to, I guess, look under the hood, look past the big mega tech companies.
That's Bruce Anderson there from Morningstar. And it wraps up the podcast for this Friday and for this week. If you enjoy it, don't forget to give it a like and a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and to click subscribe. See you next week.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only and should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and it does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.
This SBS on the Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.